Thanks for checking out this past Sunday's teaching. Every Tuesday, we'll release audio from the previous Sunday's message. If you want to hear the Vertical staff talk more about what these teachings mean for everyday life, a roundtable discussion releases every Wednesday. Thanks for listening.
Well, thank you for joining us for the weekend teaching here at Vertical Church. My name is Ben. I'm the lead pastor, and this is a good friend of mine, Drew Cleek, who's recently joined our teaching team. You may recognize him from some of the other teachings during quarantine. And I have to be honest with you, I have dramatically been looking forward to this weekend to be able to sit down with Drew, specifically for this reason, that Drew in his real life, in his other job, is a member of the military and the special forces. And especially this weekend, Memorial Day weekend, we as a community want to pause and say thank you for joining us. And you're a member of the military or formerly have served in the military. We want to thank you for your service. As thin as that sounds, that's kind of a compact statement over a large part of people's lives.
We have a very unique situation here at Vertical because we have a large military contingency, and specifically for Special Forces guys right here.
Yeah, it's like the SF guys started showing up and then more started showing up. So we've had a sensitivity that God's kind of up to something with that. So I just want to take a second based on our friendship and our relationship to say thank you to you personally. You've taught me a lot about what military sacrifice actually means. It isn't just the individual, it's the spouse, it's the children, it's the extended family. So the decisions that you've made to protect our nation, but also something I've learned through talking with you guys is it's not just America, there are innocent people across the world that need defending, and you guys do an excellent job with that. So I just want to say thank you.
Thanks, man. Thank you. I got to say thanks to Justin Atkinson, the guys that brought me in and helped me feel welcome here.
Yeah, so. Yeah. He sent a call ahead and said, hey, I need you to look out for this guy, right? So this kind of gets to the heart of something just maybe would help us launch off. I know when people hear that you're a member of the Special Forces, I mean, we all have the History Channel and can watch, you know, the Q course or the parts that they allow us to see. And so when people hear that you're SF, there's probably this instant like default respect, which is probably just a little awkward, right? Just because we understand as civilians, there are difficult things that go on being part of the military. Mm-hmm. I want to take a moment though, before we get into this big story today and get to Jesus, just to ask maybe what your motivation was for joining the military. That part of people's story really fascinates me.
Yeah, so my story of specifically my journey for Special Forces was born out of failure. I went to Mississippi State University with the full intent to play baseball there. I landed there at a bad time and it didn't work out. And so my grandfather was a Green Beret, Mavi Saw guy. I'm from Vietnam. My uncle was a Ranger Regiment guy. So I had that military lineage. And a couple days later, after being cut from the baseball team, I walked into a recruiter's office, and I just had to be a part of a team of some sort. I had to join something that was going to be bigger than myself. And so that's why I walked into that office. And then years down the road, because it is a long process, I finally was able to wear my Green Beret, really excited about it.
And so the fact that you got cut from one team made you join another. You know? So look. It's crazy to me, and this seems to happen a lot, that it's like this one event happens and then boom, these guys find themselves in a recruiter's office and the rest of their life is kind of planned out, yep. You know? So the physical difficulty, the training, what it's required to earn to be a part of the SF community, like we're all familiar with that as civilians now, but there are other more difficult parts. Mm-hmm. And not long after we met, you started telling me this story. And I've wanted our community to hear this story, and we've struggled how to work this in because we're not out to leverage people's emotions. We're actually out to honor this man and his family and the things that he did. You experienced more than any of the other difficulty. You experienced difficulty in the loss of a friend. Mm-hmm. And I'd love for you, you built this out a little bit on our Vertical Plus podcast a couple of weeks ago. I'd love for you, if you're willing, to kind of build more of the story out about Drew and where that took you in your relationship with God.
Yeah, so Drew Ross was a really good buddy of mine. So when you say Drew, you're not referring to me.
Yeah.
It is confusing. But Drew Ross was a really good friend of mine. On November 27th of 2018, I got a call from Felicia, his wife, and she had told me that Drew had been killed in Afghanistan. And for me, I mean, that was just, like, that was earth-shattering. Like, you talk about, like, some of the hardest days of your life. That right now is probably the hardest day, the hardest memory that I have, and it still is very raw, like when I talk about it. Just because, I alluded to earlier, the qualification process to become a Green Beret is so long, and there's so many obstacles, there's so many things you have to deal with. And when you're going through that, you're going through it with a very small group of individuals. And you go through things that a lot of people will never go through. After we had talked on the podcast a little bit, and as I've like been thinking about Drew, like running up to Memorial Day, and you run through the memories with this guy and the difficulties and the challenges that you overcame together, because everything's done as a team. Like I said, like I was part of, I joined Special Forces organization and the regiment to be a part of something bigger than myself, to be a part of a team. And so everything that I did, my success to this point now, was rested on the shoulders of other men. And Drew was one of those guys. I mean, I met him the very first day that I signed in at Fort Bragg. And we almost every single training event were in the same small group. We were in the same carpool together every single day to work. He was there when my daughter was born premature. And my wife had to be rushed into the hospital. His wife sat with my kids. I was there, and I officiated his wedding. Like, it just, guys.
You guys were tight.
I mean, yeah. Super tight. So yeah. when I had heard that he had been killed, like, just everything just seemed to stop. Like, you don't ever prepare for that, especially in our organization. Like, okay, we all have this idea that, like, what we do is dangerous, but it's never supposed to happen to the guys that you know, because they're the best. Like, Drew, out of our group of individuals, was top tier in everything. Like, he was organized, he was efficient, like, he was in shape, and he excelled in everything we did. So I would never have thought when Drew was leaving for Afghanistan that he would never come back. And when he didn't, it was just, it really just changed the trajectory of, like, where I was as a person, and a lot of the questions I had in my faith as well.
So part of your training convinces you over time of this invincibility. Mm. And then you see guys that even within this training kind of are cut above the rest. He was one of those guys.
Yeah.
So you get this call, as you described, sitting at your kitchen table, and then a couple of more difficult days ensued after that. Just so we can take our community to the place where you were emotionally, I want to push you just a little bit further, if that's okay. Yeah. A difficult day where you showed up at the airport to receive Drew back from overseas. If you could help us just kind of walk around in that moment, I think it would help us understand just the raw nature of this day, the reality, so that we can then discuss how God worked in that.
So when a service member gets killed overseas, it's not just like we just move them from the combat zone and then bring them straight over. There's like this process, there's all these things. So the days immediately following like Drew's passing, and I'm sitting with Felicia, and I'm talking to the family, and they're trying to get all the details organized, and they're trying to get everything worked out. And then on the military side, there's escorts and specific things that have to be done. Like, everything was just, I remember the immediate days following were just so busy, so packed with just trying to like arrange everything, right? And then, like, things just seemed to slow down, like, really quickly. Myself and a guy named Cody Trevelyan, another really good friend of Drew's, who's also in the Q course with us, we got asked to go and meet the body at Dover. And so we got in a truck, and I remember that drive very vividly. I mean, it's a pretty long drive from Fort Bragg, North Carolina. And as we're driving, I just remember, like, we talked about stories of Drew, reminisced. We finally got to slow down and really, like, think of, like, who he was as a person. And it wasn't until we actually were pulling him off of the aircraft. And Mike Tovo, another friend who had flown over from Europe with him, because Mike was stationed in Germany, got off the bird with Drew and stuff. Like, that's when, like, the reality and the heaviness really just started setting in, the sadness. Because immediately when I got the call from Felicia, it was shock, and it was, okay, move into action. Like, what can I do for the family? Let's get food prepared. Let's start getting all the arrangements done. And then, like, the emotional impact really set in when we pulled Drew off the aircraft, and I was like, this is final. Like, I mean, the vice president's saying, there's all these people that are out there. it was just, it was extremely difficult.
Yeah. Well, I can't imagine, and I would never disrespect the military community by saying I know exactly what that feels like, but I do recognize in your story a feeling that I've had, and I would assume that the people who are watching have had as well. It just feels very disorienting to be trapped in a circumstance that you never wanted and that you didn't think actually was even possible. And of all people, this guy, you know. So part of what we could pause here and say is this is part of us honoring Drew, as your community, honoring Drew. Mm-hmm. The fact that this man, the way that he pursued his life, the things that were important to him, his memory, although he and I have never met, lives on now in my story and also in your story, which makes this even more dramatic. And it causes people to ask, and I think you were, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think you were probably asking questions like, hey man, this just doesn't feel fair.
No.
And because you're a man of faith, directing those questions to God. I've had conversations in our community where people have told me, they looked at God and said, where were you?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you have all this control, why weren't you looking after Drew? And it really comes down to, why was God asleep on the job? You know, you had done your training, he had done his. Why was God not available to protect this man? And it just throws you into this time of confusion and anger and bitterness and grief, all those things when you talked about those journals stacked up that we saw. Those were full of your life experience, and a lot of those pages, as you've told me, had to do with this circumstance, the loss of Drew. So we discussed off camera, how do we bring the story to our community and connect it with Jesus? Because that's the goal. And I think that's something that Drew would want as well.
Yeah.
How do we connect this with Jesus? And we batted around a few things and we landed on the story. And lately, inside of quarantine, the stories of Jesus, the actions of Jesus have just elevated to such a high level, and we're drawing a lot of strength from those. So I love the fact that God is using this, but I think this story may help us wrap our mind around to try to equip people who may be watching, like, what do we do in these circumstances? We're in a series called Framework. We're trying to build the short list of things that are required to follow Jesus well. We tend to complicate things, and we're trying to reduce a little bit. So let's just recap the story for the people watching. But Jesus is doing a lot of fantastic things, and he gets cornered, which happens quite frequently. This story is out of Matthew chapter 20, and he starts to tell the story. He introduces it by saying, if God were in charge, which is kind of a funny statement, because God is in charge, this is how things would go. And he tells a story about a vineyard, which the people that were listening would immediately understand, this is our cash crop. The vineyards that are operating around, this is the most important thing for us. Jesus says, God is like the owner of a vineyard who traveled into town and was looking for laborers for the vineyard. He shows up at 6 a.m. The workday at that time goes from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. He says, God travels in and he says, the landowner in the story says, I need some laborers. He hires some people out. And they agree to work all day for a day's wage, which is awesome. They're in this place looking for work. Well, the workday at that time was broken up into shifts, about 3 hours long. So every time a break happens, the landowner goes back into town looking for more people. So the assumption is he has a very large vineyard. He's looking for more people to work, and he hires people every shift. Then he gets towards the end of the day, 5 p.m., as the Bible recounts it. There's 1 hour left. The landowner goes into town one last trip, says, hey, how come you guys haven't gotten to work yet? The guys say, hey, no one's hired us. We want to work, but no one's hired us. The landowner says, basically in our vernacular, hop in the truck, let's go to work.
Mm-hmm.
So they get to the field and the day's over. Then the foreman on the job there at the vineyard starts to pay everyone. The people at 5 p.m. get in line first. They get their wages, hold out their hand. They get a day's wage. So the guys in the back of the line who showed up at 6 a.m. are thinking, man, if those guys got paid what we agreed, we're obviously going to get at least four times that. We've been here that long. They get up to the front of the line, they get a day's wage, and they start to complain because it doesn't feel right. I mean, even listening to the story, I'm like, that isn't right.
Yeah.
They worked all day, and they even say, we've been in the heat all day long. You're going to give these guys that have been here an hour exactly what we get. So I'll start to read it here because it's too good to summarize and I don't want to mess it up. So this is Matthew chapter 20, 11 through 15. Where we're going to go after this is trying to connect the feeling of these men and your feeling and my our feeling when we're in unjust circumstances. Matthew 20, 11. When they received their pay, they protested to the owner, "Those people who worked only 1 hour, yet you've paid them just as much as you paid us who worked in the scorching heat." I don't know if you're this way, but I get very descriptive when I'm complaining. So these guys are that same way. He answered, the landowner answered one of them. And I love the fact that Jesus puts this voice in the landowner. "Friend," he meets him graciously. We see this in the father and the prodigal son story. He's very gentle with the son. "Friend, I haven't been unfair. You agreed to work all day for the usual wage. Take your money and go." So Jesus is making the landowner like diffuse the situation here. "Just take your money and go. I wanted to pay this last worker the same as you. It's what I wanted to do. It's not against the law for me to do what I want to do with my money. You shouldn't be jealous because I'm kind to others." So there's a tension in the story in that the landowner, from one perspective, is doing something that isn't fair. Then he makes defense for his action. So my curiosity has piqued here as we're having this conversation, kind of making the turn to wrap it up now. As you're hearing the story of the landowner, comparing it to those feelings that you had at the airport, and look, the truth is, people watching, we've all had our airport day. Mm-hmm. It may be less intense than the one that you've walked through, but we've had ours, you know. What comes to mind for you when you hear the story of Jesus and you think about your relationship with Drew?
Yeah. I mean, if I'm putting myself back to that day and even the days following that, because, I mean, like I said, I still struggle with that a lot of times. I mean, especially as Memorial Day comes up or the anniversary of Drew's passing comes together, like, all those things still bubble up these emotions inside, right? Because we're emotional beings. And I see myself very much in the protester that's coming to the landowner and saying, this just isn't fair. Because in this world, we're so close to the earthly things that are happening that for us, everything is merit-based, right? Like Drew, and it's binary a lot of times. It's, well, Drew was good. The guy that killed him's evil. Like, and how does this work, God? That's not fair. That's not just. And there's no way that, like, we as humans, like, and as people that are just here, like, very quickly and then gone, like, that we can understand that a God that's living in eternity, that's basically directing and guiding, and he has his sovereignty over this whole world, like, how we can even fathom what he is working behind the scenes and what he's doing. Mm-hmm. And so when we say, God, that's not fair, that's not just, God's like, you don't understand my justice because I'm so much bigger than you. I'm doing so many things levels higher than where you are. So yes, you don't understand, but you know what? Like, I'm here, trust in me, take comfort in me. And that's ultimately where I had to like settle my heart. Like, is that, you know what? It doesn't make sense on the base of merits, on Drew Kleek's sliding scale of what's fair and what's not fair. Like, it doesn't even quantify. However, like, when I take it from God's standpoint and I say, God, I just got to trust that you're bigger than the situation that I'm in and that you know what's good, because it says in the Bible that God is love and God is kindness. And so when I put my focus towards those things, I know that God's used Drew's life exponentially through this multiplication of a series where people are, like you said, he's part of your legacy, even though you didn't even know him.
Right.
And so that is that's something that gives me encouragement as I read this story, as I look back at Drew's life, as I deal with my own life, because it changed me so much in how I look at my own children, I look at my own family, like just the friends and the people that I talked to about Drew and who he was. It is a powerful message. It's a powerful story that God knew exactly what he was doing when he had Drew, and Drew's special for him and is still special now, today, in eternity. So
yeah, it's very difficult that the people closest to him also paid a price in his loss. But to understand that God is using that in a way that it feels like to me that Drew would be proud of.
Yeah,
that he would say is worth it, based on the perspective that he has now. this idea that we're so close to the ground that we just cannot achieve that perspective. I have these memories of being a child. Your dad throws you on his shoulders, and you're like, whoa, I've never seen things like this before. And it feels a little bit like that's the trap that we're in. This word that you use, trust, is so clutch in that that trust ends up being the salve on the wound of that loss.
Yeah.
And once you experience that trust, it just becomes so different. It's not that the trust makes the pain go away, but it helps the pain matter. And that's, I think, what people need most as they're following Christ. When I think about this story briefly, I just think in my own life, what I've got to do is be willing to accept God's provision and also God's decisions. And that's hard for me. I want one, but not the other. Thank you for your provision. I will make the decisions.
Yeah.
And God, in his care for me, through this story, has communicated to me, no, you can't do one. You have to have both. And I have learned, as much as I want his provision, I also want his decisions, even when those decisions feel like they cost me. You know? So it's been my hope through us sharing this story today that we've been able to communicate that as Jesus followers, all of us will enter into a moment where we're questioning God. And God is prepared for that questioning and is also bigger than that questioning and can use that to move the ball down the field, but also care for us at the same time. He's a beautiful landowner, and he cares for the workers. He cared for Drew. He cares for Drew. He cares for Ben and the people that are watching us. So what I'd like to do to close out today, if you don't mind, is just ask you to pray, specifically for people who have experienced loss. If we have members of the military community watching this that can resonate exactly with your story, but also the people in our community that have experienced loss in this season. If you would pray for them, that would be just incredible. It would be an honor.
Yeah, let's do it. Father God, I thank you for who you are, God. I pray for the people that have experienced loss in our community, whether they're military or civilian, God. I specifically pray for Drew's family, Beth and Stephen and Felicia and Sarah, mm-hmm. God. I speak into their lives, God, and just pray that you just give them that trust, God, that helps heal those wounds. God, I pray for the people that are sitting in our community right now that are just facing the facts of uncertainty, God. They're facing the question of what is just and what is fair. God, I pray that they find that trust as well, God, and all the things that you're doing, the provision and the decisions, God. And I just pray over Vertical Church, the leadership of our church as we move forward out of COVID-19, God, and we just start coming back together, that you just bring this church and a collective and a community, God, to be stronger than when we started in this quarantine season. It's in your name. Amen.
Amen.